Good morning. I'm Tom Arnold. I'm a member of the Board of Trustees here, and Fran has asked me to talk about how I promote respect for the independent web of existence, our seventh principle. I think she thought I was going to talk about environmental law, but I retired from law practice in 1995, so that's not what I'm going to talk about today. So how do I promote the seventh principle? Well, I can think of two ways that I do that now. First, I serve as the steward of a 72-acre parcel of land in Acton. The word steward is important because it means preserving the natural values of the parcel for the benefit of the public. My primary responsibilities are to clear the branches and trees that blow down across the trails and provide trail maps for the public. By maintaining the trails, we hope the public will use them and will appreciate the ever-changing variety and beauty of this small part of the natural world. But the second way that I try to promote respect for the natural world is with my work as a nature photographer. It's often said that photographers fall in love with their subjects, be they grandchildren or birds or a single drop of water hanging from a pine needle. And that's certainly true of me. Every day that I go out to photograph, I feel that I'm being given a gift, a smorgasbord which never fails to surprise and delight me, a dragonfly with tiny droplets of dew on its wings, the intense yellow and red colors of fall leaves that we've seen in the last 2 weeks, the infinity of a blue sky, or the spectacular yellows and oranges that you see in the sky when the sun rises over a Maine coastline. I try to capture these images in ways that convey the sense of awe that I feel when I see them through the viewfinder. I can still remember the emotion that I felt one day over 30 years ago. I was shooting a cluster of small red berries on a tree, and I had started with a 55 millimeter lens, which showed the tree, but also the background in clear focus. I decided to play with depth of field, so I took a long telephoto lens and used that to focus in on the red berries. And as I corrected the focus, the berries came into sharp focus and the background was completely blurred, just a gray color. And I remember thinking to myself, the emotion that I felt was, this is just so amazing. I don't even know the word for it. But it was amazing for me to see that. So if my images trigger the same emotions in you, then I have encouraged in a small way the appreciation of the natural world for you and for everyone else who sees them.
Good morning, Gal. I have to say my heartfelt sympathies to you and your family. I'm going to be talking about death and animals, and if it's too much for you, please know that I take no offense if you feel like you need to move on. My name is Heather Merrill, and I'm a social thanatologist. And if you're asking yourself, what? Please know you are not alone. A thanatologist is someone who studies death, dying, and bereavement, and a social thanatologist is interested in how people and cultures deal with death, dying, and bereavement. In other words, I'm interested in how the interconnected web deals with death and dying. The company I started 3 years ago, New England Pet Hospice and Home Care, helps people care for ill, elderly, and special needs animals at home, following the human hospice model of interdisciplinary care. When I say this, I usually get one of two reactions, actually three. One is, huh? The other is, you must be nuts. And the third is, you must be an angel. And I don't think of myself as any of those things. I'm just an animal lover who believes death is a sacred and important part of our lives that reveals much about how we live our lives and teaches us volumes about heart-centered living. Think about this. In the last 100 years, our society as a whole has lost touch with the dying process, with death, and with healthy grieving. In the early 1900s, 80% of people died at home, and half of all children died before their first birthday. People of all ages cared for their ill and dying with their own hands, preparing their bodies after death, sitting vigil in their homes, and burying their own dead. Today, most children will live to adulthood, and 75% of adults will die in an institutional setting. We send our elderly to nursing homes, our dying to hospitals, and our dead to funeral homes. Children, and often adults also, are kept from the ugliness of death, often out of sight of their own loved ones as they age, and especially as they die. We no longer know how to care for our own, and we are extremely uncomfortable doing so. At the same time, unrealistic, accelerated, and sensationalized depictions of death, dying, and bereavement flood our homes every day. In the news, television, movies, and other media, we see death as it rarely is, quick, violent, and without consequences. We expect instant death and a steady, predictable decline. We are wholly unprepared for the more common progression of aging and disease leading to death. It's unpredictable, unstable, slow, and often very confusing pace. So how does a hospice for pets fit into this? Consider this. We accept animals into our homes now more than ever before. 39% of homes in the United States have at least one dog, and 33% of us have at least one cat. With the average lifespan of a pet of 12 to 15 years, it's clear that most of us animal lovers will see our animals age and die in their time with us, and we will be the primary caretakers. Furthermore, 64% of homes with children under age 6 and 75% of homes with children over 6 have pets. This means most children in this country will experience the death of a beloved animal before they reach maturity. What we teach our children about caring for animals and illness and infirmity informs their worldview of how to treat all living beings in similar situations. When we care for our animals well, we learn skills that benefit not only the animal itself, but all for whom we will care in the future, whether they have skin, hair, fur, fins, or scales. In my time working in both human and animal hospice, I have seen much and learned much more. That as we have lived, so shall we die, whether that is lovingly, loudly, quietly, angrily, or peacefully. That something comes next, even if we don't know what. That loss is loss, whether it's loss of a person, an animal, a job, a marriage, a hope, or a dream. That the skills needed to cope with loss in a healthy way can be learned, and they are transferable across this wide web. That when we open our hearts to the difficulty and uncertainty of loss, we live more fully each day. And that our lives, our losses, and our joys are all indeed interconnected.